This is the Bloody Disgusting Podcast Network.
You're listening to Nightmare on Film Street. The current time is 6:66. Traffic is clear ahead from here to the afterlife, but it's hell outside. For the next hour, you're on Nightmare Time. So, let's give a grave welcome to our hosts, John and Kim.
Hello again, fiends, and welcome to Nightmare on Film Street. I'm Kim.
I'm John.
This week, we've been ghost-napped.
Which is to say that we are talking about a bunch of kids that have been kidnapped by ghosts in their very own family home. So tragic.
In
so
their
sad.
Very own closets.
We are talking about Tobe Hooper's Poltergeist, arguably Kim and I's,
not even arguably,
totally our favorite movie, the one movie we've always been scared to talk about on the podcast. We'll get into it. And also Steve Miner's House from 1985, a movie I've been obsessed with since childhood. But before we get into it, Kim, what's keeping you creepy this week?
Well, I don't know if you heard that audiogram at the beginning of this podcast, John, but we have joined the Bloody Disgusting Podcast Network.
That's, they contractually obligated us to put that in.
Don't.
Every episode, get used to it from now on.
The blah-blah-blah-blam.
The blah-blah-blah-blam.
We're so excited to be part of the Bloody Disgusting family. Obviously, Bloody Disgusting is a huge name in horror.
The original name in internet horror, right?
The go-to for online horror news and everything horror. And they got a bunch of cool movies that they've actually made, which is pretty fucking cool.
Yeah,
so,
I'm sure you've heard us talk about VHS 1,000 times on this podcast.
We're very stoked to be part of the Bloody Disgusting Network with all of their amazing shows. As far as what that means for you, not much is changing. All of our episodes are going to appear in the regular feed. They're going to drop every other Thursday like normal. And we'll have those bonus interview episodes whenever we got something cool and new to share with you.
Oh, man, October's looking real good. Like, I know we're a few weeks out, but I'm real excited for our Nightmare Alley episodes coming out around Halloween. Outside of podcast news, we still have new movies hitting drive-in theaters. I mean, your local multiplex might be open. If you feel safe going to the movie theater, you go right ahead. Kim and I are still hitting up drive-ins, mostly because we have an RV, so we are unfairly equipped to have a movie night out.
Last time we went to the movies, I made coffee and tea.
It was a triple feature. Yeah, we had enough time for lots of caffeine. We recently saw The New Mutants, which, believe it or not, is actually in the theater.
It is real life.
It's taken 2 years to get that movie to the theater. And, you know, as much as I didn't love it, one, it wasn't really made for me, but two, I'm real happy to see it get off the shelf. I don't think any movie that people put a lot of effort and time into deserves to just be locked away and never seen.
Yeah, I'm a little sad that we didn't get to see the changes that were intended, because I think this film, having now seen it, definitely needed some tweaking. I just felt like, and as you said, superhero movies are really not my bag. This is probably the first X-Men movie I've seen in a movie theater / drive-in.
I think it's probably the first X-Men movie you've ever seen, let's be real.
Yeah, that's probably true. Yeah, that's true. Yes.
Which is fine. Yeah, like, superhero movies not necessarily our bag. Unfortunately, you tell me that, like, oh yeah, it's also a horror movie. Like, I guess I gotta see it.
Yeah,
now.
It was just like, twist my rubber arm.
Yeah. Came out at the right time. Like, if this had to come out in a month where there were four other horror movies going to the theater, I might have just skipped it entirely.
Yeah, but the dialogue was just not landing for me, and
And how do you misuse my girl Anya Taylor-Joy, right?
I know!
Oh, boy. Oh, man. She could have been great. She's got a fucking ability where she just goes to a hellscape for fun. And I didn't... Oh, man.
How is that a mutation? I just don't understand anymore.
I don't know anything about these characters. There is actually a really good review on our website written by Adam Donaldson, who has an understanding of the New Mutants and, like, where they came from, what the comic books were like. And his general consensus, which I'm seeing a lot of people have, is that, like, this movie deserved better. You know, like, the movie deserved better, the fans deserve better, these characters deserve better. Which is always unfortunate, because you essentially are seeing on screen a lot of people that had doubts about the film and, like, changes that could have been made. Even just the fact that we've all been talking about this movie for 2 years means that people did not have faith in it, right?
Yeah, and I think what's unfortunate, too, is that if this film doesn't do well financially, that these are all new characters for this world, and they're all being first introduced.
Yeah.
This could have been, like, a platform for all of these younger actors have a standalone character that could go on to its own, like, branch of the franchise.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure, like, I really felt like they were setting that up for Anya Taylor-Joy's character, but I doubt that's happening.
Yeah, unfortunately. But, I mean, there's not a whole lot else playing at the theater right now. So, I mean, like, if you want some new content, it's out there. I would say check out Bill and Ted. That'd be my recommendation. See Bill and Ted instead. Oh, hashtag Bill and Ted instead.
If you're new to the podcast, every month we do a new theme encompassing the podcast, the website, all things Nightmare on Film Street. September is a haunting on Film Street, and we're talking all things ghost, paranormal, and the supernatural. Hence, this episode, Ghost Napped.
Yeah, if you're obsessed with ghosts and the paranormal, this is your month.
Yes, so hit up nofspodcast.com and check out all of the fun ghostly themed editorials, reviews, and content that we're dropping there. And also, this entire month, we are doing a huge giveaway.
Massive giveaway.
We're calling it the Haunt Your House giveaway because we want you to stay indoors. We want you to stay home. We want you to stay safe. NOFSpodcast.com/haunt. We are giving away over $500 in horror prizes. We have spooky haunted house Blu-rays. There is a Funko Pop Halloween advent calendar.
Fuck yeah.
And maybe the pièce de résistance is the VHS board game Nightmare from the early 90s. We have an extra copy and we are giving it away to someone.
Yeah, we are the kind of people that buy any copy of Nightmare that we find at thrift stores. So we've amassed a small collection and we see no reason why it should just sit on our shelves. We want to give it to you to enjoy. Because, oh boy, is it just some pure nostalgic fun.
Oh, so good. And I mean, it's in pretty gnarly condition, but it's...
I mean, both are. We're not... It's not like we... Even our own copy is not in great shape.
But it's like over 30 years old, so I feel like anybody that'll get it will still be super stoked. And if the person that wins doesn't have a VHS player to play the game, the actual full length of the tape is on YouTube.
Yeah. You don't even need the VHS
anymore.
No,
you just need the board. But the tape is cool.
I mean, the tape's pretty great.
But the tape is pretty
good. Use it for your Instagram post. That's all you need it for. After that, right in the goddamn bin. Get it out of here.
So make sure you enter that giveaway at nofspodcast.com/haunt.
And lastly, before we get into the show, I just want to give a quick shout out to our most recent patrons, Nick, Klaus, Lexi, Caroline, Matt, Kim, Catherine, Zach, Mick, Michelle, October, Parker, Rebecca, Jason, Kayla, and Steven. Thank you so much for your support. This house would not be clean without you.
You know, it's pretty cool that the whole month of October is sponsoring us. It feels pretty great.
Yeah, you know, that feels appropriate at
this point.
I feel
pretty darn spooky.
I'm pretty charged now, yeah. And of course, also, I want to give a huge shout out to our creepy co-producers, Dustin Lewis and Dara Stone. Thank you so much for your patronage, and I hope you enjoy the hours of bonus content available to you at patreon.com/nightmareonfilmstreet as a small thank you from us to you for help keeping the lights on.
Yeah, last week we dropped a bonus episode of our first thoughts from the Russell Crowe thriller Unhinged. And this Saturday at 9 p.m. Eastern, we are doing a Netflix party watch-along of something haunted and spooky that we're not telling you what it is yet. That's at patreon.com/nightmareonfilmstreet.
All are welcome! All are welcome! Get used to that. There's a bunch of it in this week's episode.
Oh my word.
And without further ado, let's get into Toby Hooper's Poltergeist.
The house looks just like the one next to it. And the one next to that. And the one next to that. A young couple live in it.
Give Ken a kiss.
You are so unlucky.
With their three children. And something more.
They're here.
Sweetie, remember last night? Do you remember when you woke up and you said you were here?
Uh-huh.
Well, who did you mean? Who's here?
TV people.
Something's funny going on here next door.
Something,
We were wondering if maybe you had experienced any disturbances lately.
What kind of disturbances?
I don't know what hovers over this house. I've never sensed anything like it.
That thing is in there with my baby!
There are hundreds.
Now Steven Spielberg crosses a frightening new threshold into a world within our own. Its form is revealed.
What is it?
Its focus is clear. And the games are over. Poltergeist. It knows what scares you.
Poltergeist from 1982 is currently sitting at a 7.3 out of 10 on IMDb, 85% on Rotten Tomatoes. Roger Ebert gave it a 3 out of 4, and it currently has a 3.6 out of 5 on Letterboxd.
Hoo boy. I'm a little trepidatious talking about Poltergeist on the podcast.
Oh, sure.
This is something that we've always kind of circulated in our schedule. We've always...
It's always on the board.
It is always on, like, the movies to talk about list, and it keeps getting pushed back. We even recorded one time.
We sure did.
This was early on in the inception of Nightmare on Film Street. We recorded a watch-along with commentary, and it was awful. It was atrocious.
We didn't finish.
It never saw the light of day because it was just us being like, oh, this scene's good. Oh, this scene's good. Oh, this scene's so good.
Nah, you don't want to hear that.
And that's part of the reason why we haven't done a proper episode on it, because no secrets here. This is my favorite horror film of all time.
I think it's the greatest horror movie of all time.
Yeah, and...
like, not even personal favorite. I think it is a perfect horror movie.
So, we finally got it on the schedule. We're talking about it today, and we orchestrated it so that we are so fresh on the film, we literally just finished it.
Woke up in the morning, made coffee, watched Poltergeist, also forced ourselves
not to talk to each other. Oh my God.
Because that's the thing. Every single time we watch Poltergeist, we're essentially recording a podcast while we watch it.
We've talked about, and that's the thing too, is that we've talked about this film to death.
Yeah.
Because we love it so much.
Yes.
So I'm a little worried how this episode's going to go and that we're just going to sound like huge fangirls.
Probably.
But I am ready to talk about Poltergeist. Where do we even start?
Let's start with the cold open.
Oh God, it's the best cold open of all time.
Well, okay, let's start with the cold open and talk about just like the aesthetic of it being a suburban nightmare. Right?
Yeah, and there's something so great too about starting with the broadcast signal ending.
The national anthem?
Oh boy. And it's such a little time capsule because we all grew up knowing that channels would end.
Yeah, that never happens.
And now they just play infomercials all night if they don't have programming.
Oh yeah.
But I remember clicking through channels with just the no broadcast symbol.
Yeah, that was weird. That's how you knew it was time to go to bed.
I know the tone of it. Like, in my head, I know the tone of no broadcast.
Yeah.
Which is such a great place to start an early technological-based paranormal film.
Yeah. Well, yeah, also, too, like, if you want to look at this as a, American 80s suburbia, everybody's falling asleep eating food. the dog is our viewpoint through that whole
introducing the entire family.
Yes.
We're following the dog on his, like, nighttime rounds.
Yeah, like, you think he's going to check in on everybody asleep. Like, oh, I'm gonna give him a lick on the face, let him know I love him. No. He's going in, and he's just nibbling all the snacks everybody couldn't finish before they passed out.
But he does check on Carol Ann, which is very
He does
cute.
Check on... Yeah, he checks on Carol Ann.
But she doesn't have any snacks.
And you hear him go, eh. Like, the dog's a little disappointed.
But, and I think that's something that we can definitely attribute to Steven Spielberg, because he does such a good job of breathing heart and family into all of his movies. And I have to say that the Freelings are such a perfectly imagined family unit that I myself don't really have any huge family ties. Like, I'm not a big family nostalgia person. Normally in films that stuff doesn't grab me.
You trying to say you don't have a heart? Is that what?
Yes. I am soulless and I don't like children. This movie causes me to put all of that aside.
Yeah.
All of those feelings. And I am so invested in each of these children and the couple and their teenage daughter. And like, I am so elated to watch this family.
Yeah. Outside of like maybe some like tone setting music at the beginning, right in the cold open. What else is there in the first act that you would say this is a horror movie? This could just as easily be a story about a little boy and his dog. Right?
I would watch the whole thing.
Oh yeah.
All the
relationships between everybody, between Carol Ann and Robbie, just like a little brother and sister that want to play together, between Craig T. Nelson and Joe Beth Williams. They're incredible in this movie.
So good.
Yeah, like what a weird marriage they have too, right? Because they put the kids to bed, they tuck them in, they're great parents. Let's just, first off, they're awesome parents. And then at night, they're smoking weed while reading, like, parental books, and also he's reading a biography on Ronald Reagan. What a weird, weird family.
I love just how fun they are, and that we get to see them being fun, like,
with each other, right?
Yeah.
Like, not just with the kids, not just with the neighbors and their friends, but, like, they are having a great time just hanging out on a Sunday night.
And they make a really great image of parenting, because there's all these really wonderful, heartfelt moments, like when Tweety the bird dies, and then mom's discovered by Carol Ann trying to flush the bird down the toilet.
Yeah.
They end up having to give, like, a funeral for it, and that scene is so sweet, and it's so heartfelt. And then as soon as...
put, like, licorice in the box, right?
In case he's hungry. As soon as they get the bird in the ground, one, the dog's trying to dig it up, which is hilarious, but two, Carol Ann's like, can we get fish now?
Yes, that is how kids roll. Like, you're very sad for a second, and then, oh man, new pet.
There's all these sweet, monumental moments between them in that opening, and then we also get to see, like, the morning after the paranormal earthquake. They are annoying as fuck.
Oh, the kids?
Yeah, and they're flinging cereal at each other, and breakfast is chaos.
Well, Steven Spielberg move right
But you
there,
get to
right?
see both sides of what parenting is like. Like, you get to see those, like, monumental moments of being part of life and the creation of something else and teaching them the ways of existing.
Yeah.
And then there's also just, like, noise.
Oh yeah, there's chaos.
Like, you see the full fast, like, I feel like I've been a parent just watching this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Like, watching,
that's as close as I need to get.
The heartache of losing your daughter to ethereal forces.
And the pride you have watching your teenage daughter tell some, like, creepy construction workers to fuck off.
Oh, I love that scene.
That's a great scene. Like, it's stupid that she's got to do that. Like, she's at her house. Like, these are people that work with her husband. Like, they know each other. And but it's great she didn't have to step in. Like, she could see that.
And
like,
she's
yeah,
watching from afar and seeing that her daughter can, like, defend herself. And she's like, oh, so cool.
Right? She's got such a fist bump moment in the kitchen there watching it happen.
Oh, it's so good.
Those construction workers are assholes. Not just for that, but because he's literally leaning through the window, like, tasting the sauce, drinking the coffee, eating a cookie. What balls did that guy have?
I feel like there's a subtle theme in the movie that all of your hired help eats your food.
Is that because the paranormal investigator, like, literally pulls out a whole fucking steak?
Chicken wing, steak. I'm sure those cheesies weren't his.
No, yeah, he's eating Ritz crackers off the counter and shit.
And then he has one spooky experience, and he's like, I'm never coming back here. The steak was rotten.
Yeah, he gets the fuck out. The one person you can trust in this movie is the person who brought her own flask.
I love her.
She's incredible.
Are we jumping way too far, though?
We don't have to jump, but I mean... Just accept that we're going to be all over the place.
It's true. So
our love for this movie knows no bounds.
We're talking about relationships. My absolute favorite relationship. I love Craig T. Nelson and Joe Beth Williams. I absolutely love the sequences where we get to see them in their bedroom. And when they're all giggly and giddy and
talking
going over
the neighbor.
Oh, so perfect. It is perfect. But the relationship between mom and the paranormal psychologist,
yes,
is the greatest relationship in cinema.
It is. It's so funny because it comes at a moment where we're talking about the heart of the house. Like, that's very much like the heart of this movie.
Oh,
I used to think it was so boring. Like, seeing, the first two or three times I watched it, I was like, man, they whisper so much, and I just want them to get back to the ghosts.
As a kid, I was just like, where's the haunting?
Yeah.
But the care and the tenderness between these women and they're relating based on motherhood. And we don't know if the paranormal psychologist is a mother.
No.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, well, I think everybody there has been brought to the paranormal research because of something that's happened to them.
Mm.
We just don't hear what her side is, right?
Yeah. But just the care and the genuine, like, just bonding between the two of them. I could watch that whisper conversation for 2 hours.
Oh, yeah. And even them the next morning when they're, like, after, some shit has gone down and they saw a bunch of spooky ghosts and they're just hanging out at the breakfast nook.
Oh, so
hugging
good.
Each other. Like, Mark's not coming back. I will be back.
Yeah.
Like, stay strong. Mm. Oh, it was good. They're great. She's great throughout the whole movie.
She's so wonderful. And the thing is you trust her because she comes across so genuine. And you know, all of these paranormal investigators are in over their head. 10 seconds in that house, they've seen more paranormal phenomenon than they have ever seen.
Oh, yeah, they're
their...
fucking bragging about being able to
Took
watch a
7 hours.
7 hours to go across the
now,
floor.
You cannot detect it by the human eye, but I recorded it on time-lapse camera.
Greg T. Nelson slamming a Budweiser at 7 a.m.
Uh-huh.
Like, 7 hours, huh? Okay, yeah, sure.
Opens the closet door, a light screws in on its own and lights up.
Yeah, a fucking record player is playing off of a protractor for some reason. We don't know why, but it's great.
Magical.
Right? There's also that moment where Jo Beth Williams is going into the closet where she's going to rescue Carol Ann, and the paranormal researcher comes into the room, and I was like, why is that happening? But I think it's just because there is somebody else on the other side that she's trying to reach, and like this is her one opportunity to maybe go and find that person, but she knows she can't. And even Zelda Rubinstein tells her to get out of the room.
I thought it was because she cares about Jo Beth.
And when Jo Beth
offered herself up to go into the closet, she was like, her first instinct was to protect her because she's been working with her so over the few weeks.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, maybe that's just something.
I think it's ambiguous.
Yeah.
There's a lot about this movie that's ambiguous, I think. Particularly in relation to the haunting and like the visual manifestations that we get to see. And I'm really excited to talk with you, like, on the record about it.
Okay.
Because I don't know if we've... Like, I don't really know your internal interpretations of
Because when we watch it, we're just like, this is fucking great,
Look
right?
how great this looks!
Oh, yeah! Ghosts!
Boop!
So what is it specifically you want to get into?
So the main point for me, and something that I've always just kind of chalked it up to, like, ectoplasm.
Okay.
The scene where we get the first huge visual moment with the ghost when there's that thing descending the stairs and there's all the lights behind it.
Camera's
recording. What we see on the playback from the camera is a whole bunch of spirits, like old-timey spirits.
Just,
they're
like,
all wearing hats
and
stuff. And they're all walking through, almost like they're like boarding the Titanic or something.
Yeah, that's a great way to describe
it. But what we saw before that was like one entity with a head.
Yeah.
And then there's all these like ectoplasmy like ribbons hanging off of it. And then the lights are separate. I don't think I thought of this previously, but watching this, maybe it's Carol Ann walking through the house and the ghosts are following her.
That's an idea.
Because I just, what is that huge entity? Because it's not the beast, because it seems very peaceful.
You're talking specific. Oh, just, so it looked like, it almost looked like one of the corpses that comes out of a coffin later in the movie. It looked like a lot of flowing hair around it and like a big billowy dress.
But why did they get to see that? And then what they saw on the camera was something completely different.
I mean, I'm not really sure why they were able to see one of them in particular, but I did notice that surrounding it were some like orbs.
Yeah, no, I think the lights are what was captured on the camera. Like the orbs were the ghosts that we saw captured on film, but that the single lone entity I feel like is something that was not captured on the film.
I think it was maybe just like one, like to simplify it maybe is like the one of the ghosts is like a shepherd and the rest is the flock. Like,
well, they were
one
saying
of them
though,
was able to, okay,
the paranormal people were saying that because Carol Ann's got this light about her, this life force, they're flocking to her and following her around.
Yeah.
And if she's just walking around the house, they're just going to walk around following her. But I feel like if it was actually Carol Ann, we would have had a bigger reaction from the family in the living room.
Well, they were also talking about the idea, like when Zelda Rubinstein's character shows up.
I love her.
She's the best, right? Can you mind giving me a little space?
You're jamming my frequencies.
I was telling Kim, this is how she has to enter every party from now on. We always show up fashionably late. We only come in when the entrance is crowded, and you say that to everyone.
And I wear pearls.
Right? You get your Jim Jones fucking glasses on.
Oh my God,
walking,
I love her.
The room.
Yes!
So she was talking about the idea that these spirits don't know they're dead. Right? Like, they are just in this, eternal dream state.
Because there's a whole bunch of living people just living their lives
right
on top of their graves.
That's confusing them. It's jamming their frequencies.
Woke them the fuck up.
So I think Carol Ann is just the beacon that is like, there is a life force here. And if I can see that life force so strongly and I'm compelled to it,
they're
or
following
something else,
that instead of going into the afterlife or whatever.
Yeah, and like that's how they wind up in the living room. But I think that's also what maybe helps remind them, like they're not necessarily remind them that they're dead, but that there is some sort of plane that they're on. Because they do walk around like they're looking at things, like they're in search of something. They're not sure where they are, but they're not scared, so they're not questioning it, so it's like they're in a dream.
Yeah, and the film does a really great job of presenting a really good metaphor for that with the bugs being attracted to the porch lights.
Yeah,
but it's totally
but
true.
It is true. It's there. Yeah.
Because it happens with the neighbor's light, and the bugs are attracted to his porch light, and they get bit by all those mosquitoes.
They get bit by a ton of mosquitoes.
Which is hilarious, but also when Craig T. Nelson's boss comes to visit because he's been missing so much work, the porch light, goes hugely bright.
Yeah, what you got in here? 300 watt bulb?
You're attracting every bug in Cuesta Verde?
Right? Oh, he's great. I fucking love... So, it's so interesting that Jo Beth Williams has the parapsychologist, and, those two are just, so fucking tight, and they got each other's back. They're in this together, and Craig T. Nelson's guy is his boss. And
he's
his boss,
shitty boss.
Yeah, never listens to a word he says. Every single sentence he has is said over top of Craig T. Nelson. He asks him a question, and he starts talking again before Craig T. Nelson can even fucking answer. It is so good.
And he talks almost like an old guy on the phone who can't hear well and is just talking in one volume that's just a little bit too loud. You know what I mean? What? Didn't nobody complain about it before?
We're starting phase 5.
Right here. This could be your bay window.
Because he's definitely not listening to Craig T. Nelson.
Not at all.
He's just waiting for his turn to talk. But yeah, their house is definitely that beacon that is attracting all the ghosts. Yeah.
And I think it's the beacon because of Carol Ann. So
you don't think it has anything to do with the location? You think it's just Carol Ann?
I think it's a perfect unfortunate accident that all of these bodies are underneath. There's a lot of life in Cuesta Verde. There's all these young families starting their lives. There's kids being born. There's children being brought up. There's a lot of life there. The first night when we're with Jo Beth and Craig, and they are in their bedroom after Carol Ann in the opening sequence when she talks to the TV.
Yeah.
Jo Beth says that this was something she experienced when she was 10 years old, and she attributes it to sleepwalking.
Right.
So,
oh, yeah, because then her dad got her checked for hickeys and stuff.
Yeah, so I think that the family has this hereditary ability that's maybe a psychic ability.
Oh, shit.
And Jo Beth has passed it to her daughter, and she's obviously grown out of it. And so Carol Ann has this ability that she can not communicate with spirits, but maybe she's a little bit more receptive to
she's in tune
their presences. Because I'm assuming, and we find that out near kind of the ending, that all of Cuesta Verde is haunted.
Well, yeah, because
shit's happening all through the street.
That fucking sequence where they're trying to drive away and just the gas main is broke and there's fire and fucking fire hydrants are exploding into the air. There's explosions blasting out all the glass in everybody's cars. It's awesome. But even the boss says that they cleared out all of the entire valley was also a graveyard.
Yeah. And the reason why I think the Freeling's house is the epicenter of this, because there's this really dark entity that is there.
Yeah.
Or maybe because all these spirits woke up, the plane was thicker than ever, and he spotted this opportunity with this girl to maybe control this purgatory. So yeah, they're all in purgatory, And he opens a hole between that world, snatches Carol Ann, and that's how the door exists in the house.
Oh, you don't think that that door was always there? Like, you think he created it?
Well, they say that he broke a hole through the universe.
That's true, yeah.
Or something. So I'm assuming that it was just this, like, really unfortunate accident that we got this really evil presence next to this girl that has some conduit ability.
Yeah.
And poof, we have Poltergeist the movie.
You know what's great is that we are inferring a lot of this. Like, we are picking up on small things because we've seen the movie 1,000 times.
Because I've seen it 4,000 times.
Right? If this movie had all of those bits of dialogue and explained all of those things to that degree, we would be bored with it.
It'd be too much. Yeah, I'm only coming to these determinations because I watched the film so many times.
I don't think we've
times.
Ever talked about this stuff.
But I think what's so wonderful about that is that this film doesn't spoon feed you the universe it's created.
No.
Because the majority of the film, we are the freelings. We are introduced into this world where we do not understand anything. And even the people who are the experts, quote unquote, they don't understand anything.
No, they've never seen anything like this.
They're all surmising and interpreting based on a psychic's abilities or previous research. So nothing is spoon-fed to us, and we're not treated stupidly, and the secrets aren't spoiled. The film is what it is. I mean, the Freelings, they honestly do not care about this paranormal world. They just
not
want
at all.
Their fucking daughter physically back.
Yeah, they don't give a shit. They don't want to try and find... They don't necessarily care about researching it. They definitely don't want any of this footage put on 60 Minutes.
No, they just want their daughter back.
That's it. And once they get her back, they're like, cool, we're fucking moving out of here. Never again. Like, even though they are confident that the place is safe, we're leaving.
I don't know why they get so confident the place is safe. They literally went under this beast ghost's nose, stole its one present, and then like,
yeah.
And then we're just like, well,
house is clean.
House is clean.
Yeah, put it back on the fucking market. Let's get out of here.
But they were like, wait, we haven't done anything scary with the clown yet.
Right? That's the one thing you always forget about.
I never forget about the clown.
But it's just like when it comes, like, oh, right, this hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, because I always remember it happening during the tree bit. Like,
yes.
Clown, tree, both scary, scary.
Yeah, and the thing too about this movie, like the tree sequence, we'll call it, and the clown sequence at the end, the scare sequences of this movie are so long. They last forever. It's not just like, oh, the tree broke through and grabbed a kid, and then the next morning we were like, what are we gonna do about this? And then something took Carol Ann, and then this happened. Like, everything happens on top of each other, and when the ghosts come for everybody, they fucking come.
Yeah, and though they are primarily focused on Carol Ann,
I think they're trying to get both kids.
What I love, though, that's very true. What I love, though, is that the whole family kind of gets to experience this haunting together. Like,
yeah.
When the tree busts through and kidnaps the kid, Craig T. Nelson is running through the mud in the backyard. He's trying to get the kid from the tree. There's a fucking tornado. Like,
right? A fucking tornado that doesn't take up anybody else's house?
The sky is also haunted.
Oh, man.
It's insane how quickly the haunting escalates. Like, that whole sequence, and I guess it's kind of the midpoint of the film, where the son's kidnapped, Carol Ann's sucked in through the closet. They're in the swimming pool!
That's the beginning of Act 2. That's us breaking into Act 2, I'm telling you.
It's fucking crazy.
Like, I would believe...
It shoots up to here.
Yes!
Like, we are 10 alarm chili, and we stay there the whole time.
Yeah, and like... the performances in that whole section, too, are unbelievable. Like, super believable is really what I mean to say.
This
like,
is how you'd react with ghosts stealing your babies.
I believe that those are their kids, the way that they react. Ugh. Especially the way she says the swimming pool. Oh.
The swimming pool!
Thank you. oh, boy. Like, there were scenes in this movie this time where I was, like, really watching it, really paying attention, where I was like, in that parental fear that they
have.
Yeah,
and that's exactly it.
I was just like, am I gonna fucking cry while watching Poltergeist today? And not even like during the emotional parts, during the scares? Like, I was so scared for them, for their kid. Like, that moment where they gotta pull the blanket off of the clown doll when
they think it's
their dead daughter. Jesus.
I have zero maternal instincts, but
yeah.
This watch like turned a switch on in me that I was just like, why am I feeling things about this dead bird in the licorice?
Oh man, there were fucking scenes when now I'm listing off all the spots where I almost cried. where they pull them through, they pull Carol Ann and Joe Beth Williams, Heather O'Rourke and Joe Beth Williams through the Ether World, and like they're covered in gross slime, and the researchers go in to see if they're okay, and Craig T. Nelson goes, no! Like he has to be the first person to like grab them. Like, it's, I don't know. That was like, this is hurting me a little.
Oh, and then when they start to wake up in the bathroom and the paranormal psychologist like pushes
them
through.
They close the door.
And they give them privacy. Oh.
Everybody is rooting for each other in this movie. There is nobody who's there to like undermine everything.
Yeah.
If this movie
was
made.
There's so many allies.
Yeah. If
maybe that's why I like this movie, because everybody is supportive of each other.
Yeah. Modern movie now, there would be a moment where one of those researchers tries to tip the scales to do something for himself. Like when they throw him the rope, there's an opportunity for him to like climb up or for him to do something.
Or like sneaks information to the media because he knows it's gonna like blow up his career or something.
Yeah, and it just like that's like they're just putting more stakes in the situation, but like, hey, you know what? Their fucking daughter is being like sucked dry by this weird demon thing. That's enough.
Also, too, if this was made today, we would go into that world. This would be like an Insidious situation. Like now, we would go into the further.
You know, that's true, but one of the things I liked about the Poltergeist remake was when we got a little glimpse of that world, and it was just like fucking like people on top of each other and just arms everywhere. It was creepy. I'm not gonna bring that up ever again, don't worry. We're staying with just Poltergeist 1982.
Okay.
All the talk we have about, like, if this movie was made today, like, we can't ignore the fact that they remade it already.
I find imagining that place and keeping it as something we can't see
way more effective.
And it's more accurate to, I'm going to say hauntings with quotes, but, like, hauntings are about what you can't see.
Yeah.
If there is this other plane that this film is presenting, do not take us there. Because it takes us away from the Freelings. The Freelings can't go there.
Yeah.
I mean, Jo Beth does, but...
but we can't go with her because it doesn't exist.
Exactly. Well, not...
You know what I mean.
It's great that it's this unobtainable place, because if it was somewhere you could go and somewhere we could go as the audience, the Freelings would be busting down that door.
1,000%.
They would be breaking the fourth wall and and running through the set to get to that place.
I mean, the only thing stopping them from doing that the entire movie is that there is literally like an invisible guard dog at that door.
Yes.
Because he keeps saying to them, it won't let you go in there. Like, you can't. Like, it's a cut scene. We don't necessarily see it, but like that one researcher gets fucking chomped by something whose mouth is like as big as Jaws.
Yeah. Fun fact, I'm sure we've talked about it before on other podcasts, because Poltergeist comes up a lot, but
sure
when
does.
The final sequence where he's trying to get the kid back again, the manifestation of that guard dog, it's the MGM lion.
Oh, the roar.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I've forgotten that. That's great.
Yeah.
I love that fucking face. And it's because he's trying to pull the cord back. It's like, no, there's only one direction.
Oh, not that
on
one.
This.
The one at the door.
Oh.
Yeah, not the skull
like
of the closet.
That's my fucking favorite. Ghostly thing. That fucking, like, guard lion, we'll call it, that is, like, just screaming at Jo Beth Williams. I love that. And I think partly it's because I walked in on my mom watching this movie as a kid, and I remember seeing that and going, what the fuck? And she was just like, no, go away.
Do not watch this.
Yeah, there were two movies I remember my mom watching that I wasn't allowed to look at because they were too scary for me. One was Poltergeist, the other one was Golden Child. The Eddie Murphy movie.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I gotta get you to see that one. That's a weird one. But like, just talking about the idea that like you should not be able to see that other realm, that really makes, like, I mean, there's a lot of things that attribute to this, but like that really helps solidify to me the Poltergeist as like a really classical haunting movie, like mm-hmm. a haunted, like something like The Uninvited or The Innocents, Turn of the Screw, like way back, black and white. Classic horror movies, kind of what I'm talking about, Rebecca. And it's not like they are showing you set pieces that you would say, oh, this is from this movie and this is from that movie, but it has like such a classic haunted house feel. Like, I almost feel like we should have paired this with like an old school ghost movie.
Like when the hallway extends.
Oh, fuck.
Oh, it's so good.
It's incredible.
And we've seen it in 1,000 films. Like, the hallway extending thing is just, it's like a modern horror staple.
Sure.
And it's existed in horror cinema for 60 years.
Oh, yeah.
But
you kind of get it twice in that shot too, right?
Where the, never not love.
Oh man,
a long ass hallway zoom.
I love a long ass. I also love just like
the, and an impossibly long hallway. That's not even a hallway. That's just it's just a foyer like landing in the stairwell.
It's so
and it
perfect.
Turns into a hallway.
Oh.
Because
them so
ghosts don't want her to get in. And also, shout out to the rotating bedroom. I love...
The 80s loved a rotating bedroom, right?
Also never not love a rotating bedroom.
Oh, man, we gotta try and come up with 7 more of those to put a list on the website. Because, like, we've got the stuff.
All
got
of them are poltergeist.
Poltergeist is this, their fronts. Every other poltergeist.
I also like that no one dies. In this movie.
I honestly knew we would be watching this soon, and I ended up tweeting about
it. I saw, and I was like,
But it is, though. It is the scariest horror movie where no one dies.
Not even the dog. Okay, so there's a bird that dies, but it's a natural death.
You
had
say
nothing
that.
To do with the ghost.
I think a ghost strangled it.
Oh.
Yeah, that's right. That was it testing its power out.
Oh, and maybe the fish, because they just disappear from that bedroom.
Well, I mean, they definitely got sucked into the closet. They're out of the water.
Hopefully in
around.
The bowl. The bowl.
The bowl. It's existing somewhere else
now,
in the ethereal world.
Yeah, and now instead of following Carol Ann, the ghosts are following 2 goldfish into the light.
Like, damn it, they took our daughter. Well, at least we got these little guys here.
Don't overfeed them.
Yes, exactly. Man, you know, even just talking about that bird, like, I'm sure I rediscover this shot every time we watch it, but just the shadow of the bird over top of the toilet seat as it's being lowered down into the toilet. Oh, man. The camera work in this movie is so fucking good. It's really great at just, like, keeping a camera still throughout half a scene and then slowly starting to pull in before something happens. Or a reveal where you find out, like, oh, by the way, we've been this white picket fence.
We're talking near
a cemetery.
Yeah. Speaking on the bird, too, just another great moment about characters. When JoBeth is descending the bird into the toilet, she's, like, carrying it by the smallest bit. Like, she's holding one toe of that bird.
Yeah.
But then when Carol Ann discovers her and forces her to do the funeral, you can see her reluctantly holding the bird, like, so tenderly. Like,
yeah.
in her...
Cupped in her palms.
Yeah, and she's, like, you could tell she's, like, ooh, I do not want to be touching this dead bird, but she's doing it for her daughter.
Yeah.
And there's just something so... wonderful in seeing these parents sacrifice for their kids, like even like the thunderstorm and Craig and JoBeth are having this like wonderful coupley moment, and the kid comes in and he's scared and he gives him a piggyback ride back to his bed.
Yeah, I'm the wind, you're the feather.
And he teaches him not to be afraid of the storm, and then
he waits around long enough to see that his kid is using it
yeah. And then goes back. The kids are obviously both scared. They both end up in the bed, and it just looks like the most uncomfortable situation, but you can just see them being, like, good parents.
I also just kind of, like, she's got such a small role in the movie, which is, I think is smart, because it's really how things would go. Like, their teenage daughter.
Yeah, as soon as anything, like, happens, she's like, well, I'm fucking off to my friend's house.
But when he's, after he's tucking the kids into bed, he respectfully, but
dadly.
opens the door like, good night, Dana. And tells her to get off the phone and stuff. She's awesome in this movie.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate too, because I mean, it would be silly for us to not talk about like the Poltergeist curse that she passed away not long after this film was made.
She was murdered long at like.
I was gonna say that her. I think it was like an ex-boyfriend, jealous ex-boyfriend.
Fucked.
Yeah, which is very sad because she definitely would have had a huge career.
Yeah.
And I mean, same for Heather O'Rourke, who
right.
plays Carol Ann, who passed away in between. Before the third film was completed.
Yeah. Hearing the Gary Sherman. It's real sad.
So, I think I cried.
Yeah, I mean, like, Cursed Films is on Shudder right now. They got a great episode about Poltergeist, but, like, it's a bummer.
It's so sad.
It's a bummer.
Yeah, and it's just, like, a real medical misfortune. I think she had, like, a bowel problem or something, and it just got misdiagnosed, and it was just very unfortunate.
Yeah.
So sad. She was discovered shopping with her mom, I think. Steven Spielberg found her. She was literally just like this kid that he saw, and he was like, you must be in Poltergeist.
Yeah.
You must go to the netherworld.
You must go to the netherworld. Like, sir, I'm trying to buy cereal. Please go. Oh, Mr. Spielberg, hello. What was that about the netherworld? What? I'm really glad they didn't let him direct this at the same time as E.T. I don't think it'd be the same movie, right? Tobe Hooper brings some fucking scares to the goddamn table. And you know, with the exception, like we were talking about this being a horror movie that's got no scares. Sorry, talking about this being a horror movie that's got no kills. Like you could almost show it to your fucking kids, despite the fact that it's terrifying. But like you, with the exception of one scene, could show this to any of your friends
the
that don't like horror.
Cleaning room face tear.
Yeah, the cleaning room face tear. Like you might be able to get away with it because you know it's 1982 special effects.
It's putty. It's
yeah. Like you can very clearly see when it becomes a prosthetic, like fake face that somebody's tearing at, but it still looks good. Once he finally like gets his fucking jaw off.
And it's got that like picking a scab thing where like, you know it's wrong, but you can't stop.
Yeah, in your dreams, do you ever stop? Like, no, all of a sudden your bones, right?
Oh God.
Oh man, fun dreams.
One thing we have not touched on that we have to talk about is the chair sequence. So like, just how wonderful Jo Beth Williams is when she first discovers her house is haunted and she asks Caroline.
She's so jazzed.
And she asks Caroline, like, the TV people? It's fucking wonderful.
Yeah, by the time Craig T. Nelson comes home,
she's mastered the kitchen haunting.
Oh yeah, and she's just manic about it, right? Like it's and wouldn't you
be? Cuz it's insane.
Yeah. It's impossible.
And there's nothing scary about it at first. I mean, yes, it's scary. Your house is haunted, but like there's something guaranteed in your kitchen that is impossible.
Yeah.
And imagine just being high on that.
Yeah, when was the last time, especially as a parent who's got bills, who's got kids, who's got responsibilities, like
you had
shit
something
to do.
Fantastical happen in your life.
Yeah, like everything was just routine and hard, and like you occasionally on Sunday night have an hour where you two can just like smoke a joint and laugh in bed, right? Like
that's... pretend to be divers.
Pretend to be divers.
Before, after.
Oh boy, I love it.
I'm hungry. Like, so good. Oh, this family is so precious.
And like, you know, depending on what mood you're in too, like you can see a lot of commenting on just like suburban culture. Like the whole idea of like that gigantic neighborhood that is just cookie cutter homes going up.
And people even say, like, all of these houses look the same.
Well, in that scene, too, we're in the kitchen of
and
the Freeland's
house. And it literally
house.
Cuts to the exact same
it doesn't
kitchen.
Even cut. It fades. And you think, like, maybe we've gone to, like we're jump
back
cutting.
Back in time.
Back in time, forward in time. No, we are somewhere else in the neighborhood, but you would never know.
And it just shows that any of these houses could have this secret inside, could have this haunting, this manifestation.
Well, also, I think... We all have a weird feeling when we look at suburban homes, and especially the cookie cutter.
Let's talk about
homes.
Edward Scissorhands.
Right? Well, I think the thing about suburbia, when you look at it and how bland it is that it doesn't care about people.
The individual.
Yeah, which is great when you have a builder for a movie, which is for a movie. It's great when you have a builder who literally doesn't even give a shit about the bodies that are buried on that ground, right?
Mm-hmm.
From moment one, just like the concept of the suburban dream does not give a shit about
people. Yeah, he just put like new boxes on top of old boxes.
Yeah, or hired some people to then bury those coffins vertically. Like, right? Because like, when they all pop out of the ground, it does look like they were buried the wrong way.
The ghosts have powers, John.
Oh, it's so great. I don't give a shit. It's like, oh, I do not care whatsoever.
It's the greatest thing ever. Like, and at this point, it's almost God. Like you're so high on this movie because it's been wonderful. And then the final sequence, it's just like, oh, and now you're delivering me coffins coming out of the ground? Like,
I don't deserve this. Do you know how much money I would pay to go to like a theater experience where like all it was me trying to escape a muddy pool that I couldn't walk out of, but like corpses are coming out of the water and coffins are popping up out of the mud?
I literally had the idea of doing a Poltergeist mini putt that was just that.
Oh,
just
boy.
Coffins that you have to hit the ball around.
Like, oh no, I got my ball trapped again and I have to investigate all these great
oh,
props
no,
you have.
Oh no, it's in the swimming pool!
It's in the swimming pool! I love that the neighbors come to rescue Jo Beth Williams. Like, they're there, they offer a helping hand, but they don't go inside.
Mm-mm.
Like, mm-mm, no way.
But it's great to just have that confirmation that they have their differences. The TV, the remote, the kookiness at the door. And when they hear her screaming, like, they cross the fence and come help her.
Yeah. I totally understand why they don't go inside. It'd be weird if
it'd be terrifying. Weird
if they did. Like, it's a good moment.
It is a good moment.
It's so funny because you spend when you first watch Poltergeist, you spent like, why are we spending so much time with this neighbor? Like, as great as that scene is where they're laughing, trying to like swat away mosquitoes while he's eating chili on a plate.
Yeah, it's really weird. I think it's just baked beans.
You think it's just baked beans?
Yeah.
Still a bowl food.
Just and it definitely came from a can, let's be real. He's not baking his own beans.
And his fucking son is stealing some off of his plate. Like, his son only came with him to the door so he could, like, quietly steal some of Dad's
food. They hired a kid actor just to steal beans.
Go,
and they
I
split.
Don't know, Dad. Oh, it's good. It's real good.
I fucking love this movie.
We could talk for at least another hour, I guarantee it.
Yeah, because, I mean, clearly we have these really deep-rooted theories from seeing it so many times.
There's nothing about this movie that I don't think is the greatest moment in cinema. Like, everything about this movie is perfect. I wouldn't change a goddamn thing. And they're so fucking smart about everything they do. This is the only time we've watched it that I realized that they were thinking about where the music would come in during key scenes while filming. Because they're sitting in the living room. And they're whispering, and they're just talking about ghosts and stuff. And then slowly,
they don't know that they're dead.
The slowly, especially as the sun wakes up, the whispering gets a little louder. And like, there were some kids that were bullying me at school once. And I think that's just because that's where the music starts to swell in, and we literally can't have them whispering over it. Otherwise, we won't hear them. And then they go back to a whisper as the music fades again. Fuck!
And even visually, there's a lot of really great moments. So a lot of this film has like matte paintings.
Yeah, like, it does.
Especially
like
when we're on the hill and we're looking down at Cuesta Verde. But there's a lot of sequences where a particular frame or a scene to end on was really visually thought out. Like when we're touring through the town with the one guy that's at the football game and he's riding the bike with the beers, the kids get a mechanical car in front of his bike and he tips over.
Yeah.
But we see the bike torn up and these beer cans just spraying beer everywhere. And the camera is like on the road and we are looking up at the whole town. And there's just this wonderful visual of like town life that's about to get disrupted.
Yeah.
And it's just beer cans and a bike knocked over. And he doesn't stop to touch them. He just grabs the beer cans he can and runs into the game.
Oh, it's so good.
But there's just such a great visual moment. And there's a lot of really great shots that are just so visually well composed.
Well, I think it's also because of where they're placed sometimes, like especially that matte shot where we see the cemetery and Cuesta Verde in the same frame, right? You know what's funny is I was listening to this is so removed. I was listening to a podcast with Peter Bogdanovich talking about his career, but he was also talking about something that he heard from Alfred Hitchcock while interviewing him before filming The Last Picture Show, saying that you should never use an establishing shot to establish anything.
Ooh.
Right? Isn't that, like, insane? Like, because you think about just that cemetery sequence. What do we see? White picket fences, two guys talking, and the houses in development behind them. So, like, that's technically your establishing shot, but that's not really what you would consider an establishing shot. And we follow them, we slowly reveal that there's a cemetery behind them, and then we establish the cemetery has
the
been looming
of,
over
yes.
all of these people since before they got there. Man, it's great. The music in this movie, too. Like, to come back to those whispers, like, Jerry Goldsmith's score is incredible. Like, honestly, it's a Steven Spielberg movie, so it's almost surprising that John Williams didn't have anything to do with it. But I think Jerry Goldsmith brings some of that John Williams flair, especially in, like, the wonder, like, la, la,
the
la,
lullaby. La.
Yeah!
Well, it's a movie about, like, at the heart of this movie is, like, a four-year-old
a
girl. That is her song. It's almost like you could literally call it Carol Ann's theme in your head.
It probably is. Like, we should get this on vinyl, right?
Yeah.
I guarantee it's called Carol Ann's theme. But, like, it can turn and twist so fucking dark so fast.
Well, at the end of this movie, if you hang through the credits...
Oh, boy.
I don't know if we've ever done this before, but there is, like, so much talking and chatter at the end.
I think it's laughter.
It's fucking scary.
Because it's the choir that's doing the la-la-las, right? And, yeah, it gets weird.
It's terrifying. It's so scary. Like, and the thing too is what's so perfect. If you're watching this movie at night and you fall asleep, that is what you hear before the movie cuts out.
Oh shit!
And the movie starts with TV cutting out.
Oh, man.
Like, how perfect is that? Fuck. All right, we could literally talk about this forever.
I know. I've got so many other things that I could bring up, but like, hey, you know what? I don't see any reason why we can't do another Poltergeist episode in a few years.
Poltergeist Part 2.
Right.
But Part 1. Yeah.
Part one, part two.
So yeah, ratings. This is going to be pretty obvious. I'm a 4 out of 4.
Oh yeah, 4 out of 4.
Clear 4 out of 4. So like 4 out of 4 from moment one. It is the perfect horror film. It is so well crafted. The characters are so well envisioned and so compelling, and just, they're such a beautiful family.
Yeah, and it's also scary as shit. Like, that's the other thing,
and
too.
And like, it's scary as shit.
Yeah, it's insane that this is the guy that did Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2. Like, yeah, okay, Texas Chainsaw Massacre 1, sure. You know, it's another house, it's another story about a house where some terrible things happen. But it's hard to say Tobe Hooper was an underrated director, because we all think that his movies are the greatest movies of all time. But, like, holy shit. This guy, he did something wonderful with Poltergeist.
Yeah, and I think there's something, too, to be said about the marriage of the two of them with Steven Spielberg.
Absolutely.
Because a lot of this movie feels like a Steven Spielberg film, but
yeah,
we've never seen Steven Spielberg go this dark.
You would never see Steven Spielberg do this.
And,
yeah. And like, the reason it feels so Spielbergian is because he produced it, because he wrote it. Like, of course it's going to feel like a Spielberg movie.
Well, and I think all of the like, the nostalgia and, like, the kids' rooms and all the Star Wars and stuff.
The talking,
like,
over each other at the breakfast table.
That feels so Spielbergian.
Spielberg. Yeah, I mean, movies are a collaborative effort. It's not like one person does everything. Of course it's going to have the flair of everybody involved.
It's such a good movie. I'm so happy that we didn't just gush this.
I mean, we kind of gushed.
I know, but we at least talked about
We had something to nibble on a little of. Thank you very much for bringing that.
We talked something about other than just ghosts coming out of the swimming pool. The swimming pool!
Oh, boy. We didn't even talk about that matte shot of the clouds.
We did
rolling
talk
in.
About
okay,
matte shots.
Okay, okay,
we did.
Okay, we did.
And we said the sky was haunted, because the sky was haunted.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy 5 or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, let's move on. Let's talk about another ghost kidnapping kids. Let's talk about Steve Miner's house.
This is a house where no one should live. Roger Cobb has come here alone. But no one is ever alone.
Leave while you can.
No!
Sandy.
Horror has found a new home. House. Enter at your own risk.
House from 1985 is currently sitting at 6.2 out of 10 on IMDb, 62% on Rotten Tomatoes, and 3.0 out of 5 on Letterboxd, which pretty much means it has the same score across the board.
It's funny, too, because especially the user ratings, like Letterboxd and IMDb, you'd expect them to be a little bit higher because, especially among genre film fans...
You talking about nostalgia? You think it's got that nostalgia bump?
Well, this is a very beloved film. I know a lot of genre fans who grew up with this movie because it kind of borders the line between silly and scary.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of parents would just like walk in and out of the room and they'd see like a goofy monster and be like, oh yeah, it's fine. It's just like
but as soon
puppets.
As they fucking leave, it's just like this horrifying closet. Like, I don't know, raccoon is what he calls it. But it's just like faces smashed together.
Yeah, it's pretty terrifying. I'm really sad because I did not grow up with this movie. I know you did.
Which blows my mind.
I know. I don't understand it. I don't know what happened, but I need to redo my childhood over. Because
don't
this,
we all?
This movie is such a bonkers fun roller coaster that I feel deprived.
You feel let down?
I am very unhappy.
So you mean, okay, so this is funny. Like, we get a time machine. I go back in time to go see the Clash in concert. You go back to, like, sneak a bootleg copy of
to
House.
To watch House at 9 years old.
Yeah, you're putting it in, like, a Disney clamshell case of Pocahontas. Like, here, this is just for you, little girl. I don't
Pocahontas
know why.
Pocahontas 2, nobody watches that one. John Smith isn't in it.
No one watches it. Like, I don't even think the raccoons, it's probably all raccoons by that point, right?
She's never tree. I mean, there is ample.
Wow, they took everything out of Pocahontas
2. Yeah, well, she goes to the new world and then she's with some new guy, which I mean I guess is apparently what really actually happened, but there's no fancy tree. I mean, there is a lot of pug action. That yeah. Pug is there a lot, I think. And like, he teams up with the raccoon. Why do I know so much about Pocahontas 2? When did you first see House?
Well, it was around the time you were watching Pocahontas 2 that I watched House 2 for the first time. Like,
I love House 2.
My introduction to this franchise was House 2. I guess my parents were, they knew this one's silly and goofy. You can start with this, and if I didn't get scared by it, that I could watch House. And yeah, like, I ended up watching House 2 more. I think that one's perfect for kids. Because House 2 is very much a comedy that, like, oh, by the way, like, it bookends itself with, like, a scary villain. House 1, though, has the perfect blend of comedy horror. But, like, I would never list House as a horror comedy. It's just a horror that's just, like, pretty goddamn funny, right?
Yeah, there's something really unique, too, about House. Because the character designs and the actual ghosts are so outlandish, there's something terrifying about the fact that they are goofy looking.
The way they fucking laugh, too, right?
And there's something just completely unnerving. Like, nothing in the natural world could make these. And yeah. So, like, well, at first your knee-jerk reaction is like, ha-ha-ha, that witch character is hilarious. Then you're just like, but why is she so big?
Why does she know how to use a shotgun?
And like, why did she put lipstick on before she came?
She's got the creepiest goddamn voice. Where she's like, we're gonna kill your son, Roger!
And her laugh is like,
it's a lot. It's
nails
it's,
on a chalkboard.
Yep. This also is, it's so crazy to me that I really enjoyed it as a kid, because it's so fucking dark. Like, I was probably the age of the child that gets abducted in this movie. Abducted. He gets ghost-napped.
He did get abducted by the medicine cabinet.
He becomes a prisoner of war for like 2 years.
That's so true. His son has more war experience than he does.
He's like, why is it taking you so fucking long to write this book, Dad? I could slam God. This out in a weekend. If it's been a little while since you've revisited House, because we're just steamrolling through this entire movie, Roger Cobb is our resident Stephen King. He's a celebrated horror writer who's taken a big
Cobb's
break.
End.
Yeah, right? He's a celebrated horror writer who's taken a detour to write his memoirs. He's got to get this his own nightmares off his chest, out of his head, onto the page, but nobody seems to be
Which
interested.
No one is excited
No
for.
One wants to read a Vietnam book in 1980.
I absolutely love the signing scene because it's just this fun little flash of a bunch of POV characters of just
Who's
of
your favorite?
Who you assume to be Stephen King's best fans, like the people that Stephen King actually has to deal with.
Oh, yeah. There's the guy who's talking to him for like four people
oh,
back.
The woman that loves his wife, his ex-wife.
And watches every single
yes,
one of her shows.
And he's just like, can you just tell her I love her? And He's like, it's my ex-wife.
My favorite person is just like the weird three-piece button suit bank clerk looking guy who just goes, I will cherish this forever, and walks away. Like, what a weird day. He's also on a bit of a hiatus because his son was kidnapped. By ghosts, we learn.
And the thing is that we don't really know that until he's in the house and he starts having these flashbacks. We don't really, at first, understand what went on between him and his wife, because she's gone off now. She's got a successful acting career. She calls him from an award show.
Yeah.
And we don't really realize what the rift was between them until we get flashbacks in the house of like, whoop, your kid's gone.
Yeah, they seem like they still get along, right?
So, like, but there was just like, you know, that thing that's just like too big and like it can never be the same again, but like we still love each other, but like it's your fault that the kid is dead.
Yeah, well, that's the worst part too, is like they don't know if their son's alive, like, or dead, or holy whatever.
Shit. Do you know, like, what would have happened to the Freelings if they hadn't gotten Carol Ann back?
Oh my god. Well, I mean, we gotta look at what they look like after just like a few weeks.
But they were so in love.
Oh, you're talking divorce. I don't want to think about that.
Right?
You can't break up that power couple.
Oh my god, I'm so sad now. Okay, no more alternate universe poltergeist, because I just, like, can't handle it.
Hey, I mean, I think this movie ends with a happy note where, like, the kid comes back, she shows up in the taxi cab, they all smile, credits. I think the family's back. I think everything's been mended.
Do you think he's going to continue to write his memoirs, or do you think he's just, like, done with the dark period of his life?
Yeah, see, that's the thing. Like, House is a story about a guy who has PTSD, who it's really coming out to the surface, it's bubbling up, boiling over, and he literally can't go on with his life until he confronts these fears. I don't think he needs to write that book. Like, I think the problem is that every time he goes to sit down, the thing that's, like, the monkey that's sitting on his chest? What do you call it?
The elephant in the room? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a 100-pound fucking corpse sitting on my chest for Vietnam.
Oh, it's a monkey
with a
on
bullet
your back.
Belt.
Yeah, monkey on your back.
Yeah, what is it? Anyway, there's something sitting on your chest is usually what people talk about.
The sleep paralysis demon?
That's it. The shadow people are keeping me down. I don't think he needs to write that book anymore. By the sounds of it, no one wants to read it anyway. Like, either, like, the all he needed was just, man, there's so much going on in this movie. It's so wild that, like, this is a movie that lots of kids enjoyed. But no, like, I don't think he needs to write that book. And I think the reason he hasn't been able to write another horror novel is because the real scary thing, like, his nightmare reserve is tapped, because all he can dip back into at this point is this horrible memory he has of a time where he almost died. He watched a friend of his get carted away to certain death where he knows he was tortured for weeks before they finally mercifully let him die.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of a proxy to... for his failure to act. And
because, yeah, it's with his son too, right?
Yeah, so his failure to act in war is the thing that he can kind of look at when he's kind of peripheral looking at the fact that he lost his son and he had no power there.
Yeah.
And, like, it's hard to say, like, killing your friend is the right decision he should have made.
Right? Oh, man.
Because that's very ambiguous, too. So, like, maybe we should talk about what happened in Vietnam.
Sure, yeah. Both of these scenarios are things that, like, it's not your fault that this happened, and, like, there's nothing you could have done about it, but he still shoulders the responsibility.
But he's a dad and a man.
And a man! And, yeah, when he was in Vietnam, he was out on a scouting mission with, I don't know anything about, one, I don't know anything about cars. We've established that in the 200 episodes of this show. And two, I don't know anything about war. I don't know.
Are cars in... we have anything to say about cars?
I don't know why that came to mind.
Okay.
These are just my own personal problems.
Well, you could also add sports in there.
Yeah, sports. I don't know shit about sports. I have a rough understanding of hockey, but that's just because we live in Canada.
You were born with it?
Yeah.
Maybe he's born with it. Yeah. Maybe he's Canadian.
Exactly. So he's walking in the jungle. I think they say you gotta take point. I think the idea is, like, we gotta get from point A to point B and, you know...
Don't die.
Don't die. Unfortunately...
And what do they do?
do they get attacked. It's like, okay, so the rest of us are gonna follow your footsteps, but you guys, we're calling you Operation Human Shield. That's what's happening in this story. He's walking
Operation
through the jungle.
Fleshy Scouts.
Yeah, the Fleshy Scouts are going, they're out in front, and they're essentially just, like, looking for danger, booby traps, mines. I don't know how you look for those other than blowing up and telling the guy guy behind you, don't step here. But that's what they're doing. You know, they get attacked by the Vietnamese. And at a moment when Big Ben, his buddy, this big 6'5", larger than life goofball who's just taken too many goddamn risks with his own life, begs him to kill him. He gives him his knife and he says, I'm gonna die. I'm injured. You can't let them take me. They're just gonna torture me. You gotta do it. You gotta kill me. And he can't. He just can't do it. And that's fucking dark.
It is very dark.
I remember as a kid understanding what was going on. Like, there wasn't any sort of, like, I rewatched this 10 years later and went, oh my god, I never got it. I fully understood what was happening. One, it was just, like, so horrifying that they were in war.
And your mom comes in like, how are you liking your ghost movie, hon? You want some juice? Mom, can I never go off to war?
Yeah, I think I've graduated from juice to whiskey, Mom. Thank you very much. It's been a rough afternoon.
Oh boy.
But yeah, like, he can't kill him. Even as a kid, I understood that, like, wow, it's merciful to kill him in this moment, but that he couldn't do it, that was so fucking rough. And then to also see him get carried away and scream, I'm gonna kill you, Roger! This is your fault!
He takes the pity murder rejection very hard.
Real hard. I mean, it's dark. Is what I'm getting at. And Roger Cobb has lived with that his whole life. You know, he wasn't able to, quote-unquote, help his friend when he needed it, as awful as that help would have been. And I'm sure that whether or not he found out later on that he was kept for weeks and tortured, I'm sure he just knew that that was what awaited him.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, on his darkest nights when he's thinking about the horrible things, he's either thinking about the horrible things that have happened to his son or the horrible things that have happened to his best friend.
Yeah, and the crazy thing, too, because Ben becomes the big bad at the end.
Fuck yeah, he does.
He's the main ghost beyond the witch, who's kind of the recurring ghost.
Yeah.
Who we will talk about more because she's amazing.
Okay. Yep.
But the most interesting thing I find about Ben is that he is actually tied to Roger's real life.
Okay, sure, yeah.
So, like, the house creatures, in general, we don't know who any of them are, what they are, where they're from, what their story is. They could just be never-human things, like little demons or whatever. Like, there's a little boy, there's the witch character, there's the crazy thing in the closet. Like,
yeah.
There are a bunch of just wacky, out-of-this-world characters. But then when you have Ben, he's this, like, skeletal, deformed army man who Roger knows. So either the house is a subway stop in the netherworld and, like, ghosts can come and go as they please, and it's all interconnected. Any ghost can appear in this house. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Whereas, initially, at the beginning of this movie, because, reminder, I did not grow up with it, and so, like, I watched this like a film and let it surprise me, I just assumed that these were the zany ghosts that haunt this house.
Yeah, and everybody sees the same ghosts.
Yeah, and then when he had a personal ghost, I was just like, whoa, 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 how big is the netherworld in this house? And I think it's just, like, in behind that medicine cabinet is, like, the great beyond.
Fuck, that reveal on the medicine cabinet is so good. So good.
So good.
I don't even remember how he came to the conclusion that, like, maybe there is something behind that medicine cabinet. Forgive me for forgetting that. But when he throws the goddamn chair and it just...
Darkness.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. It's so good.
We love, like, stupid, impossible shit like that. And then when
he
peeks his head out the window and it's yeah. just wall, you're like, yeah, prove it, boy, prove it to me.
It's like the version of when magicians do a trick where they show you something and they turn it around. So you see, like, oh, it's definitely a real box that doesn't go on forever, but it's got movie magic behind it. Still works flawlessly. The ghosts, though, I think the house has moves. Like, I do think some of these ghosts are house-specific.
Yeah.
Based solely on his aunt. By the way, his aunt has committed suicide in the house.
Yeah, because she becomes, like, a tool in their box.
Definitely.
Because they definitely call upon her visual apparition.
Yeah.
Because I don't think she purposely ever visits him. Maybe the one time where she hangs her house and disappears.
Yeah.
Because that was really good.
Because this was her house. He grew up there, but she had recently committed suicide, and that's why he was intending to sell it, but sort of looking for a retreat and seclusion.
Seclusion.
Yes. He takes the house off the market so that way he can use it to write the book. But the house is still full of paintings that his aunt made, including paintings where just, like, shit is swirling around the room. She's about to walk into some bright light in the closet, and there's a picture of his son in the medicine cabinet. That's how he thinks about going into it. I just remembered. But
don't forget the garden tools.
Exactly. There's another painting with the garden tools, like, floating around a dead body that's, like, turning into sand. And those garden tools show up. Those garden tools are maybe my favorite little part of this
movie. They're the best gag of the movie.
Yeah, well, because they hunt him down.
That fucking shark fish or whatever, the swordfish.
Swordfish is good.
Yeah.
swordfish should not work so well. It doesn't come off the wall. It just flops around.
I love him though.
Moves his creepy fucking eye around. That's real effective.
Oh man.
Should not be as creepy as it is.
No, it's just so good because the swordfish itself is the ghost. Like,
yeah.
There's no ghost, like, manipulating the swordfish.
No, it's the swordfish. He shoots it, and it screams, and then its eyes go dead.
Aww.
You know, maybe that's part of the reason why this movie works for kids, because you go to a relative's
house. Because kid ghost logic, or?
Well, kid ghost logic, but also, like, you've been to a house as a kid where somebody has, like, an animal up on the wall, and the whole time you're just like, yeah, this is fucked, right?
And you're like watching it because you're like, it's gonna move.
Exactly.
It's gonna blink.
Yeah, I guess that's a credit to the taxidermy artist who made it. but it's still
congratulations,
creepy.
This dead thing looks like it was an alive thing once.
Yeah.
Except it doesn't have a body anymore.
But you stare at it as a kid. You're just like waiting for it to move. I did, at least. I'm not gonna put words in your mouth.
I agree. I concur.
Those garden tools are great, though, because they chase him around the house. One, he uses them to save his own life.
Smart.
He opens the door, and they lunge out at the witch to, like, cut her head off. But my favorite part is that when he's leaving the bathroom,
and
there's just, like, a knock on the door, and when he opens it up, there are the garden tools again, ready to fight.
They're so polite. Okay, so alternate theory.
Okay, to the whole movie.
Yeah, what if it's not actually Ben? What if it is just another ghost?
And it's just tapping into his fears.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a theory.
I mean, it's possible.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
You gonna elaborate anymore?
Nope.
Okay.
That's all I got.
That's it. Well, at least we've exercised that option. It's on the table, and you can choose to accept it if you wish.
Before we get too far into this, and before we get too far, we are already too far, and I want to bring up the neighbor girl.
Tanya? what is going on with Tanya?
So... She says, well, we don't have the aunt to verify this because she's dead. She says that, like, the aunt and her were chums.
There's no possible way they were friends. Just based on the rest of her behavior.
And she just comes by and swims in her pool occasionally.
Yeah.
Obviously, Roger is into her because she's beautiful. She jogs. She's athletic. She's kind.
They both have weird, deep V-neck cut outfits.
They both really like Jerry Dandridge.
Yeah. What is up with the sweater game in this movie?
Don't you insult the sweater game.
I mean, it's good. Don't give it. They look comfy, but.
I mean, a neck that V'd, please wear an undershirt.
It's a humble brag to wear that sweater with no undershirt.
Or a really large male
medallion.
Symbol. I'm sorry, we watched a lot of Austin Powers recently. I can't.
Yeah, Tanya's crazy because she also, she basically, like, quietly seduces him. Like, and in the sense, like, I'm coming over later for some fun.
But, like, what is her end game? Because
her end game is that just she needs a babysitter. She just drops her kid off and, like, hey, here's my son. He likes fun. You said you like fun. Have fun.
Here's his bath toys.
Yeah. Here's, you don't know me. I don't know you. Here's my son. Give him a bath. Put him to bed.
Oh my God.
What?
And so, because I guess Roger's got no backbone, it all just goes that way. He ends up babysitting this kid. He's trying to write his book, and the kid is just watching the trashiest soap operas.
I think it's his wife's soap opera, so you hold on a second.
Oh, shit, I'm so sorry.
And then immediately, like, that kid is in the house for, I don't know, 8 seconds before the ghost decides to start murdering the child. Like, the hand that he has buried, he cut up that witch's body and buried it all around the backyard, but the hand came back out and is immediately trying to, like, kill that little boy.
I love it on his little back.
Yeah, and it also, it does the great thing that Evil Dead 2 does, where the hand makes sounds like it's got a mouth, like, love it. Gold. I don't know why we keep trying to, like, come up with theories for how the ghosts exist, but, like, don't you think the witch ghost is, like, a weird, crazy version of his wife? I mean, maybe I'm saying that because she appears as his wife normally.
I mean, maybe, but also, like, the closet ghost is also as recurring as the witch ghost. He's trying, like, he feels like that's the main ghost he has to thwart almost, because it's tied to, like, Midnight on the Clock.
Yeah, Midnight on the Clock, and it's in his aunt's painting, because she's going into the closet. Or at least it looks like there's a portal in the closet.
Yeah. Is he, like, the guardian?
The gatekeeper?
Yeah, maybe. Because in Poltergeist, there's that one beast that blocks the door.
Yeah.
And they're almost very similar ghosts. They both have, like, that skeletally, sinewy face thing, which is terrifying.
You know, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, he's a horror writer. Like, what if these are creatures that are from his books?
We just don't
have enough time to go into it.
Yeah.
Hmm. And then there's also, like, the creepy kids, which, I mean, he's...
Who are fucking frightening because
insane,
they show up for
right?
5 minutes and try to pull the baby up the fucking attic.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, there's, like, a tug of war going on in the attic with that little kid.
Chimney?
Why do we keep saying attic? It's a chimney.
Yeah.
Gah. We don't know anything about houses either. Damn. All right.
Don't say that in the house episode of the podcast. We're house experts. As long as they're haunted.
I don't know if the ghosts have to... Oh, damn. Did his aunt see the same ghosts?
Oh, man.
I don't know.
Yeah, she did, because she saw the tools. She saw the gardening
tools. The tools aren't ghosts, though. The tools...
But is the swordfish. Therefore, the tools are.
We're going to have to table this conversation.
You've been beat.
Yeah.
Okay, so something we haven't talked about yet. His fucking amazing neighbor.
Yes, George Harold, played by George Wendt. He is the best guy ever.
He's like the best worst neighbor.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I would never want to have him as a neighbor, but
so
he's
annoying.
Such a good neighbor to him.
Yeah, and he really comes out on top as, like, a real good guy.
Like, just a decent dude.
At first when you meet him, he's out watering his plants for some inexplicable reason. His hands are covered in dirt.
So muddy.
Like mud. And he just comes over, shakes his hand. No one comments on the fact that his hands are muddy. He's just standing there, rubbing them together. Maybe, okay, this is just something that I've noticed.
But immediately invites him for dinner.
Yeah, he's desperate for a friend, right?
I'm sure he is also very... I assume he's a divorcee, and then he finds out
okay.
Yeah, and
then he's like, we could be buds!
Yeah,
man,
he's like,
yeah.
We can watch sports and eat wings!
Yeah. He is desperate for a friend, and he is ready to, like, let me buy you a dinner, I'll get you a burger, no big deal, da, 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 da. Like, at first, it's almost like an apology, because he talks about how crazy and batty the old woman who used to live there was, until he finds out that it was this guy's aunt.
Lovely woman.
Yeah, heart of gold. His delivery on every single line in this movie is incredible. They could not have hired a better person for this role. George Wendt's amazing.
He's also, there's something so believable about him holding a shotgun and not wanting to be holding a shotgun.
It's a harpoon gun that he's got him using. He's like, you know how to use one of these? Like, oh yeah, of course, see one every day. What is it again?
But he looks like he's never held a gun in his life.
No, especially since he's wearing, like, scuba gear while he's using it. Oh boy. But at the first sign that something's wrong with Roger and that, like, he might be, like, in crisis, he's immediately reaching out to people to come and help.
Yes, and the crazy thing too is that, like, he doesn't really know him personally, but because he is kind of a public figure, he knows his wife, he calls her up.
Yeah.
Which is such an interesting decision, especially for a movie. One, it sets up a great scare because the wife comes to visit him and it turns out to be the witch ghost.
So good.
And we all think it's going to be actually the wife.
Scared the shit out of you.
I jumped so bad. I told you I haven't seen it before. I've seen it once, but I was not expecting it.
Yeah.
But in any other scenario, like in real life, in any other film, you saw somebody running around in army fatigues and like blowing up things and making all of that kind of crazy racket, you'd be calling the police.
Well, and just talking about ghosts and just like, yeah, we got to find these ghosts, got to attack them, you know, is what killed my aunt, it's what took my son, and I think I'm going crazy. Like,
yeah, and he even says too, like, I think your husband might be having an episode.
Yeah,
which it's kind of, I don't know, there's something really heartwarming about that, because and we're still not dealing with it properly, but PTSD was something that like did not happen.
Yeah, we didn't even have a name for it.
Yeah,
it's like, oh, there, I got a little funny in the head over there.
Yeah, shell, it's just shock, like he got soft or whatever. But like,
yeah,
there's just something. So I don't know. I think it's very honorable that he, as maybe as much as maybe Roger would be embarrassed to find out that his wife was called. Mm-hmm. I mean, she knows him best.
Yeah, and he's out there just, like, walking around with a shotgun, blowing it off at, like, I don't know, 8 in the morning?
Burying shit in the backyard.
Yeah, like, oh, what's that? a garbage bag that looks like it has a body in it, and you're just digging holes in the middle of the afternoon? No, that's not erratic behavior whatsoever. I love how oblivious Tanya is, too. Like, there is a full corpse hand reaching out of that bag. And she's just like, I got this guy on a rope. I got him wrapped around my goddamn finger. He's not going to see what's coming when I bring my kid over to babysit later. George Wench is the real hero of this movie. And one of the things I love, too, is that this isn't just a story that could all have taken place inside Roger's head. Like, it, you know, sure, his aunts have the same stuff, but, like, maybe it's hereditary, you know? Maybe they are both dealing with something that's in the family. But mm-hmm. fucking Harold, the neighbor, also sees these monsters.
Yeah, that's the biggest validation, too, because a lot of the time in the movie, Roger sees, like, a creature's foot or a creature's hand, and he's trying to hide it from whoever's come by to visit. But, yeah, when the neighbor sees it, oh, shit. This is real. Like, what's in the closet is in the fucking closet.
I love that scene, too, when they're about to, like, rip open the closet door and they're just waiting there with all their gear and shit, and the camera is just, like, slowly tracking along the rope that's leading up to the door, and it's getting all tense and shit because Harry Manfredini knows how to build tension with that fucking score. I like this movie a lot is kind of what I'm trying to say. I think it's really good, and I'm happy we're here talking about it on the podcast. I don't know why I had to get so serious
there. Very well.
Yeah. Sorry, sometimes I ramp myself up to, like, this cartoonish level and I don't know where to go from there.
Like, oh, God, how do I decrease?
Yeah, it's a good movie. We're getting toward the end. I think we've kind of covered all the bases. I've screamed enough into this microphone, but I do want to gush a little more about how fucking amazing Big Ben is. Big Ben is the coolest fucking monster in a haunted house movie ever. Second coolest, next to Poltergeist. I can't forget the fact that we just talked our asses off about how amazing Poltergeist
and
is.
And asterisk, the Caterpupper in House 2.
Okay, sure, you know, like, we've all got our own personal opinions, but, you know, I... Okay, well, at least villain. We'll say villain, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, man, Big Ben's so goddamn cool. He's just, like, this decaying corpse who's still wearing his army fatigues and shit. Man, it's great. And I love, too, that, like, when Roger is trying to fight his personal demons, the demons that are in the house, he instinctively puts his military gear back on, which is real interesting because it also means that he brought it with him.
Maybe
he is working on a book about his experience in Vietnam. Maybe that was always the plan, like, put the gear back on.
Still weird.
Still a little weird, sure. But, like, even, like, he's babysitting and he's got he's got like a regular sweater on. He's working on his book. As soon as
he's
that
got
kid
a regular
leaves,
V-neck sweater on,
just a regular deep V-neck cut sweater down to like that first row of perfect abs, I guess.
Right to the belly button.
Yeah, that by the way, that was the outfit he chose to wear while taking out the garbage. Like, that's just regular.
Yeah, but he's
Roger
got that
Cobb.
Hot neighbor who might be jogging by.
Okay, so here, what we didn't see were the other 2 days where he saw her jogging, confirmed the next day that she goes by the every day at the same time, and then the third day made sure he was out at the end of the driveway. This man's a psychopath. But after she picks up the kid and the kid goes home, he's back in his army fatigues right before he gets Harold to come over. Like, he's already changed back into them and he's ready to fight. Big Ben, though, like, you can see his fucking, like, rib cage, his mouth. The animatronics on it are also great, because, like, there's no way that there isn't somebody there puppeting it. And damn, does it look cool. He's still got his fucking, like, bandolier belt on with all those bullets and shit.
He's a very boy ghost, I will say.
Okay, so is that why I like it a lot? Is that why I like it a lot?
I mean, I, in general, really like the ghost designs because they border more on monster than they do ghost. Most haunted house movies, and maybe this is specifically because they were going for horror comedy, they really went out there with the ghosts themselves, and ghosts is such a weird term to give them because they are monsters.
Yeah, there's never a moment where you can't interact with them. Like, they aren't apparitions, right?
Yeah,
they,
like,
they
if you threw a tennis ball, like, it would bounce back and hit you in the face.
Or, and you can put a fucking grenade in their chest. Oh, what a cool end. He just, like, and he blows apart into goddamn pieces. We didn't even mention the part where he rips off his fucking arm and then he just puts it back on like it's no problem.
We did just now.
Oh, yeah. Checking the box. I love everything about the finale of this movie. I love all the matte painting shots where, like, Roger's just, like, dangling from, like, what should be the kitchen but is now a cliffside.
So good.
That's great.
So good. Doors to Nowhere. Mwah.
Yeah, and just, like, the interactions that he has with Big Ben toward the end are awesome. And, like, they really bring in the whole, like, him grappling with his PTSD with Vietnam. And how Big Ben's like, you let me fucking die out there. They torture me for weeks. And Roger sort of throws back at him like, hey, man, I would have died for you. He's like, well, you can do it right now, Roger. Die for your kid. Oh, man. You're giving me a face right now, but I can't help it.
I am transported.
I've been watching the movie for 30 years, and it's like A-plus movie every single time. And I can tell by the look on your face you feel the same way.
I've been watching this movie for 2 years, and it is good.
Pretty good. Yeah. Oh, Big Ben, though. What a horrible... He's some, like, real awful villain guy, because he kidnaps his son. kidnaps his son and holds him prisoner for years. He doesn't even send him, like, a taunting message like, hey, Roger, I got your kid.
That's gotta just be the house, though. Like, maybe he's just tasked to be the keeper of the kid because he's got the personal connection or something, because, like, that house seems really interested in just catching kids.
Yeah, real good point.
Like, maybe the house just wants kids. It's not eating them. It just wants to keep them.
So is this partly just, like, exploitation of poltergeist?
Kidsploitation.
Yeah, right? They're just, like...
Kidnap exploitation.
Yeah, like, why do ghosts want kids? Like, I don't know, but Poltergeist made, like, $180 million opening weekend, so maybe we should just not ask any fucking questions,
Steve.
Put
it in the closet.
Yeah.
One thing I didn't mention that I did kind of really want to call out to is, especially discovering this later and now, like, in the 20s, yeah.
The new millennium.
Is how reminiscent this feels of, like, early Peter Jackson.
Okay.
And I got, like, total, like, Dead Alive vibes. And even...
Frighteners.
The Frighteners, which is, like, a very 90s, but, like, the ghosts and stuff, they're kind of a merge between, like, classic ghosts that are transparent and then, like, creatures.
Yeah.
And, yeah, like, especially in House 2. Like, House 2, the ghosts very much remind me of the Frighteners. And I even got a little bit of Army of Darkness when Roger goes into the netherworld or whatever.
Oh, sure, with that, like, flying fucking, like, skeleton pterodactyl
bat.
Monster.
Yes.
Yeah, skeleton bat, yeah.
There's
He's,
so
like,
many...
fucking whipping that shotgun around, too, right?
There's so many great creature designs that just so fully embody, like, the 80s, 90s that you cannot help but see those other movies in all of those designs.
And I definitely think that's what's helped make this movie fucking timeless, right? Like, this movie kicks so much ass, and it's just hitting on all fronts. Man, I it's no surprise that in House 2, they explored that ethereal world a little more. It was really sort of smart of them to tease it a bit, because, like, to introduce that and then not fully explore it almost seems like a waste. But, like, it would be too much movie for this movie.
Exactly. Yeah. You wouldn't have the personal journey if you went and spent too much time in the space.
And the fact that it's, like, black everywhere, but, like, for some demon-y monsters. And especially when he lands in Vietnam again, like, I do get the impression that it's sort of a blank void that they then just put whatever scares you the most in.
Blech.
Yeah. Sounds like the worst escape room ever. So, with all of that in mind, Kim, how would you rate House?
Well, as I said, I am not nostalgic for this movie.
That's fine.
I only saw it for the first time a couple years ago, and we revisited it again for this podcast. And we own it on Blu-ray.
Fuck yeah, we do.
But I think it's just as enjoyable. And this is kind of very rare. Normally, when I watch a movie that I find a lot of people have nostalgia for, I don't like it as much initially, not because I'm like, this is actually crap, but because you don't have those rose-colored glasses for it.
Yeah, I mean, like, nostalgia movies are always talked up a bunch too, right?
Yeah, and this film is surprisingly super fun because it has all of the tenets of a nostalgic movie. It's got crazy 80s character design. It's larger than life. It's got ghosts. It's got characters doing dumb shit.
And tonally, it's just all over the place, but it still works.
But it's just fucking fun.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what it's selling, and it delivers on all fronts.
Oh, yeah, totally.
So.
And just like the coolest goddamn poster in the world, am I right?
Yes, absolutely. 1,000%. So. I'm sad I don't have a nostalgia bump for
it. Oh, don't worry about it.
Because even without, my rating is 3.5 out of 4.
Oh, right on.
Yeah.
So that blows my mind a little bit because even with my nostalgia bump, I guess it's still a 3.5 out of 4 for me.
Oh, wow.
I'm not really a nostalgia guy. It's hard for me to say, like, I don't have nostalgia for this movie. I only grew up watching it my entire fucking life. But like when I watch it, I don't know. Maybe I do. maybe I do. But I mean, there are plenty of movies that I loved as a kid that I've revisited that I'm just like, yeah. Like I could feel my bones saying, yeah, this movie's good. My
put
brain's...
it on again, John.
Yeah, but
you want to go back to the hell.
Like movies like The Rocketeer, you know, like oh man, did I love The Rocketeer growing up?
I don't even know what
and
that
when
is.
And when I put it's got some scary stuff in it kind of too. It's like fucking like the rocket jetpack guy fighting Nazis in Hollywood. That's got some stuff that I like.
Okay, so your rating is 3.5 then?
My rating is 3.5, yeah. That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
So the verdict is in. Poltergeist wins, but
I think this game was rigged.
I
think no matter what, we were never going to give House a rating as high as Poltergeist.
House is not far behind, though. But yeah, Poltergeist is a perfect film.
Poltergeist is perfect.
Tweet at us and let us know your thoughts of these two films at NOFS Podcast on Twitter. You can find us in our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/horrorfiendsofNOFS.
Nightmare on Film Street is officially part of the Bloody Disgusting Podcast Network, but it is still listener-supported by fiends like yourself. To support the show and to enjoy hours of bonus content, head over to patreon.com/nightmareonfilmstreet. We're also going to be hosting a live stream this Saturday, if you're listening to this the day that it comes out. We're going to be watching a ghosty movie on a Netflix party. Again, all that information's over on Patreon.
And don't forget to enter our September giveaway at nofspodcast.com/haunt. We are giving away a copy of Nightmare the Board Game from like the early 90s.
Oh, that and like 400 other dollars worth of prizes.
And a ton of other cool stuff.
But until next time, I'm John.
Kim?
Stay creepy.
It appears you made it out alive. But we'll get you next time. Help us to grow the horde. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you subscribe. More terror can be found lurking on our website, nofspodcast.com. Until next time, stay creepy, fiends.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise. Having fun in the sun or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy 5 or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.